Make more of your day and stay with ABC Kimberley.
He's described it as the biggest day of his career. A young Kimberley chef has found himself cooking lunch for celebrity chef Curtis Stone. You see, Curtis Stone was at Cape Levique on the Dampier Peninsula filming a cooking show with US TV network PBS. He also spent time at Yarri Station in the Pilbara and is now filming in the state south. 22-year-old Josh Cronin served up some barra to Curtis and his crew.
Yeah, a little bit nerve-wracking for sure. I only found out yesterday that Curtis Stone was going to be coming up, so I did a bit of extra research. Like, he wouldn't be huge in Ireland, so I just did some research on... I knew who he was, basically, but I didn't know the extent. And then I was reading into it last night about multi-Michelin star head chef for Marco Pierre White. So, yeah, a bit nervous to say the least, but yeah, I just did what I do every day, really. So, yeah, try not to have a heart attack.
Did you really do everything you usually do?
And a bit more. And a bit more, yeah. Just extra garnishes. Like, the actual plate of food itself is the same plate of food that we serve to 20, 25 people every day on different tours up here. Throughout the season, it can be 50 people a day. Just a little bit of extra garnishes. And to be honest, I was just staring at him, just, like, checking how much food he'd eaten, and I had to go for a cigarette. I was like, oh, I actually feel sick. I can't watch him eat my food. I'm so nervous.
What's the significance of having someone of that calibre here?
For me personally, it'll be the highlight of my career, per se, at this stage. Like, I've never, you know what I mean, just to be able to serve someone of that calibre and just to be able to be around them, and you know what I mean, to just, hard to get my head around now at the moment, but it'll be something I remember for a long, long time. And I got the picture just to, so everyone believes me, so I specifically called him in to get a picture with him. So,
did he talk to you about the meal?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. I was kind of standing behind the pass, a bit too nervous to come out for a while and talk to him, but he made a point of coming in, to be fair, and actually having a chat with me and complimented me on it and stuff. So, oh, it was amazing feeling. I'm going to be delighted now for the next couple of months over it. Like, amazing feeling, I must say. The highlight of my year here, definitely.
What would you learn from someone like Curtis Stone now that you've done the research on him?
Oh God, just the ambition. He left Melbourne when he was just an apprentice, had worked in a couple of restaurants and hotel chains around Melbourne and stuff, but wasn't anyone significant, which is the mad idea that he was going to go and work for Marco Pierre White in London. So just moved there and worked for him for free, 6 months for free. Then he was working with him for a year, and after that he was sous chef, got moved to another restaurant, and he was the head chef in the restaurant when they got a Michelin star, which is just the dream, really, isn't it? Like, to be able to just have the bravery to go to somewhere like London and just pick a chef, pick who is the best in the world at the time, and say, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to work for him no matter what, you know what I mean? So it was actually really inspirational. Like, just, you know, because when I first came here, obviously I just seen him as the face of Coles and all of this. I didn't know a lot about him, but when I actually went away and did the research and stuff, just massively impressive person. Like, just to have the courage to be able to go. And he was doing a business degree, actually, at the start when he first decided to do chefing. He was already in college doing business and stuff, and just did a U-turn. And I'm only 22, so it's pretty inspirational, the fact that he went to London when he was 22. So his career began when he was 22, and I'm 22, so it's just, you know, dream big and all that. Like,
please don't tell me it's your last season at Cape Levique, because I love the barra I had.
Unfortunately, it is. I might be back in February for a couple of months, but we'll have to see. Because the whole working holiday visa thing, you can only work in a place for 6 months. So, and when I leave here, you can only work in a job for 6 months at a time. And when I leave here, I'll have done exactly 6 months to the day last season and exactly 6 months to the day this season. So I'm maxed out, because, like, why would you leave?
So where to now?
Oh, once I leave here, I go on holidays for 2 months. So I just go to Jordan, then to Amsterdam, then back to Ireland for a month. And then I come back to, I go to Sri Lanka, and then come back to Melbourne, and then hopefully back to Coolsman to finish out my visa. My visa ends in April. So I'd love to come back up here. It's just phenomenal.
Will you put that on your resume now? You've cooked for
absolutely.
Curtis Stone?
I actually said that to one of the front of the house earlier, and she was laughing at me. She's like, you can't put that. And I was like, yes, you can. Especially because 90% of kitchen jobs you get by walking up to the back door and speaking to someone. You know what I mean? To this day, like, my resume is good, but I still have never gotten a job through my resume. You walk up and you speak to someone, and they'll tell by the way you talk to them if you're willing. And then on your first day, they'll decide if you're going to be able. So what a thing to be able to say to someone when you meet them at the back door of the restaurant. Like,
would you show them the photo of you and Curtis?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Why not? If I have the photo and it's the truth, you know what I mean?
There's Coolgerman chef Josh Cronin talking about cooking lunch for celebrity chef Curtis Stone on his recent visit to the Dampier Peninsula. You can see a photo of Josh and Curtis on the ABC Kimberley page. So what did Curtis Stone himself have to say about his lunch? It's one of the questions I put to him when I saw him at Cape Levique.
Curtis Stone, what's with the whistle?
Well, I've just been taught by a fella I met today named Bundy how to whistle with a little shell. and he does it really well, and I do it really badly, but I'm going to master it by the time I go home.
And you've only just kind of nailed it over lunch, I see.
I have, yeah.
How was your lunch? You had the barra.
I did. It was delicious. Yeah, I mean, barra is so good, especially the saltwater barra. I love it. It's, delicious. And the only place you can get it is here, so it's awesome.
You've got award-winning restaurants. You've got Maud and Gwen. What brings you to Cape Levique?
I'm here because at Maud, what we do is come up with a menu that sort of revolves around an area. So usually a wine region. And we're going to sort of focus in on Western Australia at Maud. So I didn't want to just go down to Margaret River or south, you know, down south. I wanted to sort of experience a bit more of it. So I've brought some of my team over from the restaurant. We're sort of wandering around the state trying to get inspired by the ingredients and the culture and the music and the sarcasm in the humour. You name it. I think, you know, food is always representative of a culture. And I sort of wanted to soak up a little bit of WA so I can try and interpret that into a delicious menu.
What might you have seen on the Dampier Peninsula that might make its way to those plates?
Look, I mean, the seafood is out of this world. We've spent the morning pulling mud crabs out of little holes and spearing mullet in the river. You know, I mean, it's so ridiculous that when you say it to people back home, they probably think you're making it up. But, you know, I think, you know, one thing that I'm super passionate about when it comes to Aussie culture is the Aboriginal culture. And I think it's got such a beautiful narrative through it, and they're super respectful of the environment that they live in. You know, just this morning we're sort of talking about, you know, fish that you'd get out of a pond. He actually, Bundy taught me how to poison fish, which is an interesting thing. But, you know, it's actually not poisoning fish. It's using a native root that will take the oxygen out of the air, and the fish will literally just float to the surface. And
So did you actually do that?
We did, yeah. We did it this morning, and I was asking him about it, and he said, you know, look, the fish will come back to life after 60 seconds or so. So it's just sort of a tool to pull them out of the pond. And I said, well, would you take all of them out? And he's like, no, you'd only take what you need. You'd leave the rest. You know, they'll all get flushed back out into the ocean when the tide comes in. Same with a crab. You know, we found a crab that was of good size, but not huge. And he said, oh, we'll leave that one in here. And he said, there's plenty. We'll only take what we need. And I think that's a really interesting, beautiful attitude, you know, that the Aboriginal people have. And so that's something I really want to focus on through the menu.
Curtis Stone, I saw you were in the Pilbara just a few days ago on Yarri Station with Annabelle down there. What sparked your interest about going to a cattle station, a remote cattle station in the Pilbara?
Well, look, I think Australian beef is up there with the very best in the world. And I think Western Australia has a really interesting mix of beef. You know, if you think about the production down in Margaret River or down south where there's lush pasture, and then you think about what's up in the Pilbara where, you know, these stations are literally 500,000 acres, a million acres I think they can get up to. They're very different things. You know, like it's not often that you get your hands on that kind of stuff. So for me, that outback beef is really interesting because, you know, we went and met Annabelle, who runs that station. Those animals, I mean, they live on this huge property and with very little contact with humans. You know, if you think about it, it's kind of a wild product. I know they're not wild animals, but in a way they are. You know, like if you had a venison farm, for instance, and you were talking about a farmed product, it would be in a small area, you know, and then a wild product would be running around a national park. Well, this is kind of like this cattle runs around a national park. And I think you can really taste a big difference. And I love that, you know. I think so. Anyway, it was super exciting to meet Annabelle and be out there and sort of understand more about her production and her attitude. And I think we'll try and incorporate that into our menu for sure.
So those cattle are probably handled twice a year, as these top end cattle often are. How might that actually manifest itself and your experience on a plate itself? What does it look like?
I don't have any answers just yet, but what I try to do is be sort of interpretive of what I find, you know. And I think, to me, the beef you find in the Pilbara is, it's a really interesting breed too. It's It's an Australian Droughtmaster, which is an Australian breed. And it's like it does plenty of work. Those animals do lots of walking. Like I said, they have a really natural environment. They're, of course, grass-fed. And, you know, to me, it's all about the flavour. So how do you bring that to life? You either slow cook it or you might even serve it raw. I think my first thought would be maybe I'd do a raw preparation of that beef, just so you can sort of taste the flavour of it in its purity. And I think that could be a really interesting course.
You've recently spoken about the Australian butcher culture and how it's quite different from buying meat and produce overseas. What is the advantage of a butcher culture?
It doesn't matter what you're talking about. If you're talking about a process, the more craft, the more skill that's still involved in it, the better. And when you think about talking to your butcher, walking in and speaking to a butcher and saying, well, you know, what cut suits this, what cut suits that, you know, it's a good relationship to be able to have, you know. So I'm all about that. I think it's pretty cool. And I think that when you, I have a butcher shop in Los Angeles and we have six full-time butchers, and we do stuff that doesn't necessarily make us a ton of money, but I still think it's important to do, like make charcuterie, like dry-aged beef. We wet-age some beef. We sell Wagyu. We sell grass-fed. We sell grain-fed, you know, and I think that, you know, exploring that is kind of cool and letting customers sort of understand the difference and choose what they like.
What is the customer perception? Because that's a big change.
I think customers love the information. You know, it's funny, I always use this example of a Christmas cake. If you don't get taught how to make your family's Christmas cake, you can't teach your kid how to do it. And if your mum dies with that recipe or your grandma dies with that recipe, it's kind of gone, and that's a tragedy, you know. And I think that the same goes for all food. You know, when you're talking about the craft that can exist in a butcher shop, I think that it is interesting that you can walk in and you can speak to a butcher and you can learn and grow as a cook. And that can just be really rudimentary as to what you're going to feed your family for dinner. But yeah, I think the skill's nice.
Finally, Curtis Stone, if I gave you a crab hook right now, would you be comfortable going down on these shores and finding us a Maddie?
Look, I think I could find one. I really do. I don't know whether I could get it out of its hole because I struggled this morning and had to give my hook over to Brian, who took over for me, this incredible Aboriginal fella who was down there with us, and he had it out pretty fast. So finding it's not my problem. It's actually getting it out.